Hi, I'm Becca Otis from Five Lines Pottery in Indianapolis, Indiana.
And I'm Ryan Durbin from RD Ceramics, located in Southgate, Kentucky.
And welcome to Wheel Talk.
Hey guys, we've loved answering all of your questions so far. If you'd like to hear your question on the podcast, please send them to us on Instagram at Wheel Talk Podcast or by email to wheeltalkpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks.
Why did you say that right when we started? Did you start it?
No, I started it. Did you start it?
Yeah, but you said hi, Ryan, before we even started.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You said 15 seconds. When did you start it?
At 15 seconds.
Okay, but you said hi, Ryan, at like 10 seconds after. I'm like, are you tricking me?
No, I did not. Our clocks are not the same.
That's not good.
It's fine. I'll figure it out.
All right.
I always do. Did you do it at 15 seconds?
Hi, Becca.
Hi.
I did.
Okay, cool. Then we're fine. Hi, Ryan.
We're good. Hi.
Hi. Ryan, how are you?
I had a moment today where... Okay, so I'm doing my taxes, yeah. Right? And then they call me today, and they're like, hey, your taxes are ready. We need to schedule a time. Whatever. Okay. And then they're like, okay, let's verify your last of your social. And then they start telling me stuff about, like, you owe this, you owe that, you owe this. And I'm like, holy shit. So I owe a bunch of money, and I'm like, I should have known. You do really well, and you don't pay enough estimated taxes, you're going to owe a bunch of money. So that's what kind of got me like, I was like, Rachel, this fucking sucks.
I hate owning a business.
I hate making so much profit that I got to pay all this tax and give it away.
That's why I don't make a lot of money.
Yeah, cheers, so that's what that. I was chatting with Josh about this and reached out to Kurt a little bit earlier today, too, and was like, yeah, what it... Like, so I'm trying to think of some questions to ask my tax person to help me in the future with, are there some things that I'm not taking advantage of or things that I'm not doing that I should be doing,
wait,
even though, like, I'm not paying myself and, you know, are there ways that I can spend money that can help the business move forward that, you know,
oh my God, Ryan,
I'm not
Ryan, doing. Spend money? What?
I know. I'm
what?
Like,
it, what?
I'm like,
what just happened?
I almost need permission to do it.
Maybe this is a blessing in disguise.
Apparently. Well, I did just make a couple big, semi-big purchases, though.
What?
I bought a new phone.
Oh, yes. And that's a business expense.
Yeah. So I got the new iPhone 12 Pro Max. It's like the biggest phone.
We're twinsies now.
Do you have the Max too?
Yeah.
Nice. It's got like 16 cameras and
yeah,
it's great.
Do you know what's funny is that I ripped off the screen protector of mine and then I was like, I'm pretty sure I have two more because I always buy them in packs of three. Well, I couldn't find it. So now I I have an 11R, no, a 10R, a 10R screen protector on my 12 Pro Max and it's like an inch too small. It's
tiny.
We went to get milkshakes.
I'm sure that looks nice.
Yeah, we went to get milkshakes yesterday, and Mackenzie was like, why is your screen protector so tiny?
Okay. At least you don't have an old one that's got, like, the thumbprint. Like, it goes around
the
home button or
That'd
something.
That'd be great. Okay.
You're like, geez, Becca, get a new screen protector. They're not that expensive.
So you owe a bunch of money, and I feel like...
I did learn a couple
okay,
things.
Well, let's hear it.
So one thing that I heard from Josh that was beneficial was meet with your tax person before the end of the year so you know what you can do mm-hmm. if you're like, hey, I'm making a bunch of extra money. Like, maybe I can spend something in the last 2 months of the year.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
And, like, that's a good idea. Typically, I wait till the year's over and I send them all the stuff in, like, April or not April. I don't usually wait that long. Usually, like, February or March. And I'm like, okay, here's all the info. But that the year's already passed. Like, you can't go back to 2020 and spend money. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah. So yeah, that's the main thing I learned, as well as just you gotta do some of that money. You gotta spend it, or you gotta.
I've been telling you this. For
upgrade
a while.
Some equipment, or.
You should have bought.
I'm just like, what am I gonna drop all this money on? I don't want to just drop $5,000 on something like.
Why not buy a brand new fucking kiln?
Myself that money and.
Oh well, you know what you should be doing is potentially what you need to ask your accountant is. See if you can change your business into an S corp. I believe. I'm not a pro on
that. That's one thing Josh and one thing that Kurt mentioned, but yeah. They mainly said do that if you have employees and you're paying people, like that's when it would make sense.
I've heard that it makes sense regardless.
But I don't know. So that's something to have a conversation with them between LLC and S corp, mm-hmm. and all that stuff that the people that are way smarter than me know what's going on and know yeah. the benefits, and
because then if you can,
they can look at my business historically and so tell me some guidance,
then you can pay yourself a salary. And what that also does is when you pay yourself a salary once you are like more established and then you do decide to quit your job, then you are not like dipping, like you have back years of salary, as opposed to like let's say
you're not dipping. But, so you're saying that you increase your salary to match what you might have right. previously made.
But I mean, like, obviously you're making profit and you can show that you're making profit and all that stuff, but it's a lot easier to like make a quote unquote salary through your business instead of like being like a sole proprietor, because like let's say you wanted to buy a house, then you have to like show all these things and do all this stuff, and it's like really complicated if you're a sole proprietor and they make you like put a lot of money up front and all these things. And I think
yeah.
I could be wrong, like I said earlier. I think that if you're paying yourself a salary as like an S corp or like, you know, that kind of a business, then you're an employee of your business. So then, you mm-hmm. know, then you would get like a W-2 yeah. just like everybody else, and it wouldn't change, you know. So.
Right. Yeah, because right now the way I have it set up, sole proprietor, it's like either it shows as the business making the profit, or I pay myself and it looks like personally I made more additional income. It's yeah. like I think they cancel each other out. Like I don't think it matters to pay myself if I'm a sole proprietor, because it's all in the same. Yeah.
I wonder if like you started like taxes, paying employees, if that would help with the taxes situation too, or not.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's something to discuss with them too. Yeah, so I think the meeting before the end of the year is definitely a good idea.
Yes.
And I knew that I made a lot of extra profit that, like, my estimated payments weren't going to cover. I just didn't know how much I was going to owe, which I could have done the math. I could have just been like, how much profit? And then, like, you know, do some general math of, like, 25% or 30% or whatever you can assume that's going to be, like, taxes or whatever that number is, but... And it's I can ridiculous. Pay ahead, too. I can pay more than I need, and then that'll go to the next year.
Yeah.
I
don't know. It is ridiculous how much money we give to the government. It's like, be a small business owner.
And it feels like, I earned that money, yeah. and I'm going to give it away.
Like,
but you didn't pay taxes on it before then, so, like, you know you're going to have to pay it.
Yeah, I know, but, like, it just doesn't, like, I know. I'm not, like, this has nothing to do with politics or anything like that, but... But it's just this crazy thing, you know? They're like, be a small business owner. Like, we support small businesses. By the way, you have to pay like 35-40% taxes at the end of the year. It's like, why? Why am I a small business owner? They're encouraging you not to make money. That's what they encourage you to do. They're like, be a shitty small business owner.
I want to save a big pile of money. All right, we're coming for that pile because we want our cut.
That's crazy.
You either spend it or we take a chunk. Yeah, so that was my day. The only other thing, I mentioned the big purchase. The other big purchase was I bought some stuff from a local person that was getting rid of a bunch of stuff from a studio. Oh, yeah. It was a gentleman that was getting rid of a home studio set up from his father that was in health issues and he hadn't made it in quite a while. And he had this pottery studio of like 30 years of all these, you know, old school stuff, you know, had some some wheels in there, had some kilns in there, had some pug mill and slab roller and stuff. So I kind of got the first dibs at it because I was the first person he contacted through Clay Alliance, and I got the email. And then we kind of went that route. So I got a new, I got a used Brent CXC to upgrade my old Speedball Creative Industries Clay Boss.
Isn't a CXC better than the one that you're throwing on right now?
Yeah, I have a Brent C, so the CXC. It was a little smoother and it was a little quieter.
Why don't you switch your regular throwing wheel?
I could. I think what I'm going to do is just raise both of them up. Mm. Right now it's on the ground because previously I had boxes of clay propping up the Speedball, but the Speedball was a lot lighter than the Brent is. So I'm going to get some cinder blocks at Lowe's probably and prop both of them up. And probably get some foot mats to cover both areas. And that typically what I do is I have one wheel with white clay and one wheel with speckled clay. So I don't have to clean them, and I'm not worried about cross-contaminating the clays and stuff. So that's what I'll do. But upgraded that. I got like a cool handmade kind of bat system. It was made out of wood. He like created this little channel to hold these little guides to hold these hexagon tiles that were, you know, basically pretty close to a circle bat, you know.
That's how my first bat system was.
Nicely in that.
Like with little pieces around.
Did you make that too? Yeah, so it was pretty cool. So I got that as well with, you know, it's got a whole bunch of tiles. So I was like, I can't skip out on that because that's like a great idea. Whether I use all those bats or not with the like tiles, or if I like sell them to somebody as a set, I just feel like I wanted to get it.
Are the tiles bisque?
There are tiles from like making like four tiles.
They're like glazed though. They're finished.
They're coated. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So that's what I got. And then I sent out the stuff to the Clay Alliance, and he was super proud because he got like 20 people that were interested, and it's just overwhelming. He was taking over this studio and he's got all this stuff going on, and he's got could you imagine liquidating like everything from a studio that's been lived in for 30 years? It's like, there's so much stuff.
I love how you're asking me that. And I literally just did that. Like, not for 30 years, but I literally just liquidated an entire studio like 4 months ago. And it was fucking terrible.
Yeah. Right. And especially like, he's the son.
He had no idea.
He had some connection to it, but he's trying to clear it out because he's got, you know, a lot of stuff going on. But yeah, one thing that was hilarious.
Okay.
So we're cleaning out the stuff, right? He's cleaning out clay and whatnot. He freaking dumps this clay in the toilet in the basement. He is flushing it. Oh my gosh, it was hilarious. But I didn't say anything because I'm like, hey, I'm in your studio, like I'm out of here soon. But he's dumping this stuff down the toilet. Don't ever do that, by the way.
Well, I mean if it's like once, hopefully it won't matter.
No, it was not once.
Did you tell him? You should have told him.
He's getting rid of everything. What am I going to tell him? He's been doing it for years. What's me telling him at the very last minute going to do?
That's a good point, I suppose.
And he's out of the game. Like he's the son of the maker. Like he's, you know. Oh man, I just couldn't help but laugh inside a little bit at that, but it was like, oh my gosh.
That's funny.
How about you? How's your day and week going?
Well, so yesterday we had a gas leak in the studio, or we found out we had a, if you recall, last week on Wednesday, I got really sick working at the studio, and I was super nauseous, and I was super tired, blah, 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 and I was like, I can't do the podcast. It also happened on Sunday, where I got super sick. Now, these were both, like, moments where I was there alone with the, usually we had, like, the garage door open, you know, or something, like, airflow coming through. So, anyway, this, leak has probably been going on for at least 2 weeks, and it was, like, a slow leak, and it was right above my head. So.
Oh my gosh.
So.
So how did you determine, how did you know that it was happening? So,
okay. I remember smelling something on Monday, just very briefly. And then, and I was like, oh, it's probably the kiln room. And then yesterday, I walk in and I'm like, it smells weird. It smells like, kind of smells like gas. And I looked at Abby and I was like, does it smell like gas to you? And he's like, she goes, I think it smells like pizza.
Where's the pizza?
Well, two people in had pizza for lunch. And so, oh. And then I was like, Mackenzie, does it smell like gas to you? And she's like, yeah, it kind of smells like gas. And then we walked over to Bradley and we were like, Bradley, does it smell like gas to you? And he's like, oh, I thought that was my breath.
Like in his mask or something?
Yeah.
Like breathing in his mask and he's like, yeah. Oh man, that's
weird. He was like, I'm so glad that somebody was like, oh no, it does smell weird. So then, and Rebecca was gone. So what had happened was like the garage door was open and then they closed it and they left to go to like IKEA or something. And then that's when we started like really smelling it. And then we called the gas company and then we had to leave. This is the second time I've been through this whole situation. Like one time, like a couple years ago, my heater was leaking carbon monoxide and I almost died. Yeah, so that's fixed. So that's good.
That is good. Did anybody else get sick? Did you ask anybody
well,
else?
Well, Bradley felt weird yesterday, and so did Abby, but they had both gotten their vaccines, so they were like, oh, I think it's just my vaccine. But I think that it was probably, because it smelled pretty potent yesterday. It was pretty, really faint on Monday, I believe. I've been probably affected by it a little bit too much. So that was fun. What's great is that I woke up and I was like awake this morning and like, you know, like the past couple weeks I've been like really tired and really I just haven't felt good. So anyway, that's why. So that happened and I don't know if there's, we kind of talked about this last week, but I've been really getting into like art history. And or pottery history.
Yes, very much.
Very much so. It kind of stems from like appropriation within culture, which I feel like is everybody does it, you know, and it's something that we all do, but like it's kind of this I kind of really want to like look into like the Asian influence within pottery and like Japanese versus Chinese versus Korean and like, I'm finding out there's, like, a whole hell of a lot of appropriation within the Asian community, which is really interesting. And, like, people stealing things. And, it's been really interesting. And, I never thought when I was in college I would actually buy a pottery history book for fun.
Yeah. It's like buying a textbook.
Yeah.
It's like, what? You're gonna read them?
Right. I was like, damn, like this is when I literally bought four of them and I was like, this is what I'm living my life as. It's a good thing I don't have a TV because like yeah, that's what I'm doing now. Like I get home and I start reading about pottery. So it's been fun. Hey, your birthday's in 13 days.
Nice. It is.
Yay, you're almost 30.
It's coming up. Yeah. Now that I'm thinking about the timing of stuff, I'm like, I don't think I'm going to do that mystery box sale on my birthday. That sounds like too much work.
Every year when I have...
I'm like, I'll hold
every
off.
Every year when I have the shop, I did a sale on my birthday for however much I was. And it was fine, like when I turned 25, 26, you know? And then it...
Like 26% off, yeah, is that what you mean?
Yeah, or? And then it got to like 30% off, and I was like, whoa, this is a lot. But it's fine.
Did you see Justin Rawshank did that April Fool's sale? I don't know if you've seen that in the past, but he starts at like 7 a.m., and he starts at 50% off everything, and then at like 11 a.m., he'll drop it down to like 40%.
Oh, that's how that went, okay. Like,
it slowly kind of tapers off throughout the day. It was pretty cool. That's cool. We got some stuff two or three years ago, I think.
Nice. So
that's a cool idea. And he just hosted every April
Fool's. That's cool. Day, that's a great idea. Yeah. Okay, so what are we talking about today? I feel like we should probably skip all the questions because...
That's fine. We're already 20 minutes in.
Yeah, it's a continuation of
last week's. Yeah, so it's basically part two of Art Show Question and Answers, which we got from you all through Instagram. So we'll do these occasionally, whether it's a story post and we're like, hey, give us some questions about this topic. Or it's a post and we're just like, hey, put some comments down here with questions and we'll compile them and we'll do that. So that's what this came from. If you didn't send us questions, that's how this came about. We'll do those more in the future. So you all have no shortage of questions, which is great. That keeps the content moving and keeps us
seriously
talking, so.
I feel like, you remember when we did the podcast with Paul Blaze? And he was like, how do you not run out of stuff to say?
You are the content.
And I was like, I don't fucking know.
You're like, I find out the day of and not like minutes of. And I'm like, all right, that's what we're talking about.
Also, I was going to say this before we start. I was thinking about this today and I was thinking about how I get excited to do the podcast. But like that, you know, we get to like hang out for like 3 hours every week, and I was thinking about like if the podcast ever ends, we'll probably still do like a video chat every week.
what would cause it to end though, that we would still chat, that we would not host
the podcast? Because we don't we are not the types of personalities to like
hold a grudge and be like, okay, that fuck that
right
person.
We're not the type forever of personalities, both of us, to be like, no, fuck you, I'm never talking to you again. So I don't think that we'll ever like not be friends, but I mean sometimes things end and I don't want it
things happen
yeah I don't yeah. want it to end, but I'm just saying that if it did end, I feel like we're gonna be talking like once a week for the rest of our lives. And I'm kind of excited about it.
Love it. It's like a consistent thing, and it is fun to be like, all right, what day were you talking today? When are we getting together?
Yeah. My friend was like, oh, right, it's Wednesday, podcast day. It's like, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. We are starting.
So a lot of these first questions are going to be about booth setup. I think at the end of last week, we kind of ended with, you know, getting ready for your show, making sure you have everything you need and like ready to go so that when you get there, you know what's going on. And this one's about booth setup. So the first one talks about setup and breakdown time. So that's like, I guess this is how long does it take you to set up and break down? And what about for you? You've been doing the same consistent setup for, you know, weeks, every week for
5 years.
You know, 4 or 5 months of the year, and then you do it for 5 years. Like,
Well, let's read Ashley's comment because I feel like there's a lot of stuff. Should we read the comment and then we can talk about it? Okay.
Sure.
She says, this is Ashley Boldover Ceramics. And then Shelby Shawning Pottery also said setup and breakdown time. Ashley says, would love to hear how your booth setup has changed over the years. Oh. Never mind, we'll read that one next. Anyway, hello, Becca. okay, so my booth setup time is an hour and a half. This is a 10 by 20 booth outside. I'm putting up exterior walls, rolling them up, and all the weights and all the things. But I should mention that we park right next to our booths. So it's not like we're carting anything in. There's no dollies. It's all just pull it out of the van and put it where you need it. So my booth setup is an hour and a half, 2 hours at the most, and an hour if the gremlins are helping. There's like two kids that kind of help sometimes. Pay them a dollar.
What are they helping you do? it's not like taking pots out and putting them
sure,
on shelves,
yeah,
is
yeah,
it? Or
yeah.
is it?
Oh, okay. They've been around the booths for so many years, they know. They're not gremlins either. They're awesome. Anyway, moving on. So an hour and a half to set up. I would say the majority of the setup is the surf, like the framing. So getting the two tents up. So set up the two tents, half height, roll up all of the side walls, like install all the side walls, roll them up, bungee them up, and then put both of the other tents up, like all the way up to the top, and then put in my frame for my shelf, and then put in my shelving, and then put up the tables, and then the hanging table in the middle. And then the pottery, like putting the pottery out, takes like no time because I don't care what it looks like. So, and like you do it so many.
Is it like, you kind of know like all the mugs can go here and all the bowls and whatever can go here. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, so I get there.
So that show starts at what time and when are you setting up when you get there? Like,
I get there at.
So it's like 9 a.m.
I would have gotten there at 7:30 and started at 9. But usually I got there late at 8 and started at 9:30. Because I was the farthest driving one. I would drive an hour and a half. So.
Yeah. And you're like when it's 9 o'clock, you're probably just putting pots out on shelving. You're not like still like clicking your frame in and all that stuff.
No.
Like you've already got the structure there. You just don't have pots and inventory on the shelves.
Right. Yet. And also this is a show that's like super laid back. So if you're not ready by like 9:30, 10 o'clock, who cares? Like it's a tourist town.
Yeah.
You know, your car needs to be moved, but that's about it. So, and then tear down, I think the fastest I've ever torn down is 30 minutes.
Yeah.
But usually it takes like 45.
Yeah, I've probably done about that time too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're always doing this by yourself for the most part, except for the two helpers occasionally.
Yeah, and only one of them would help. They're twins, so only one of them would help. But yeah, doing it by myself. But remember, I'm not wrapping pots. I'm just packing them and hauling them. And I also don't drive with my pots very far because I would park my van in Leavenworth and then drive my car home. So keep that in mind.
So you're bringing your car with new stock.
Yeah.
And you're leaving pots in there week to week if you need to in your tent and all that stays in the van.
Yeah. On somebody's property.
You're not traveling. Gotcha.
So I drive to my van, put new pots in the van, pick up the van, drive to the show, and then.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't realize you were doing that. I thought you were driving the van back and forth, but that makes more sense now. Because, you wouldn't want to have to transport all that weight. If you didn't have
I used to. I used to, but yeah, it's a lot easier. When I found some place to park it over the week, it was a lot easier to do it that way.
Yeah.
Okay, what about you?
Yeah, I would say for me, if the show starts at 10, I'm usually getting there about 8 because I like to leave a little bit of leeway. Some of the shows that I do, it differs. Like, you know what spot you're going to. You know how you're going to set it up because you're in the same spot pretty much week to week, right?
Mm-hmm.
The visitors are going to approach your booth at the same kind of area. The neighbors are going to be in these spots. But mine have a little more flexibility. Sometimes I don't even know exactly where I'm going to be until I get there. So I have to be flexible with leaving myself some time to figure out how I want to set the booth up. I usually have pretty standard like setups that I can do, and I get there at 8, starts at 10. I've probably got my tent up and got the tables out and tablecloths on in 30 minutes or so. But yeah, like you said, some of them you do have to dolly work in. A lot of them that I've been doing, you can like pull right up and drop your stuff and then go park your car, walk back to the lot or walk back to wherever the show is, and then start setting up. So yeah, I would say 30-ish minutes to get the general stuff set up. I have the tables and the tablecloths and stuff. And then I'll start putting pots out. So I am a little more particular with putting pots out because, like, if Rachel's there and she's helping me, I'll usually give her an easy task, like, okay, the mug rack's up, just put mugs on the rack, because I don't really care, they're random, they're
right,
you know, 20 to 25 on a rack, like, just put them on the rack. And then, you know, I might be like, okay, put the oil bottles out, because they all go on one shelving unit or whatever, and they're kind of staggered, and just mix up the colors. But for the most part, the other stuff, like putting other things on the table in organized fashion, of like keeping the heights of things going kind of up and down as your eyes move, and mixing up what colors go next to what colors in the like shelving cubbies and stuff like that. Like, I want it to look a certain way. So I am a little more particular, and I take my time to set that stuff up so that it looks inviting and nice and keeps your eye moving through the booth. And, you know, that's like an hour or so doing that. And I'm not usually rushing. Like, I'm pretty lax there. I can take my time. I'm always, you know, definitely get there earlier if you can, especially if you haven't set up a lot of booths or you need to shift with the weather. If it's going to rain that day, maybe you move your tables in mm-hmm. a little bit closer so they're under the tent, so they're not outside the tent. You don't want to have it outside the tent, it get rained on, your tablecloths get ruined. Luckily with pottery we can get it wet and it's not a big deal, but if you have bags and tablecloths and all that stuff under the table, it could get wet. Like, be cautious of that and kind of plan ahead. But I'm mostly thinking about the customer flow of, like, where am I situated? Am I on a corner? Am I not on a corner? With COVID, you generally have a bit more space around your booth, so you're not going to be right next to a neighbor, and you can pretty much organize your booth however you yeah. want, and it's pretty much going to work from one show to the next, because you're definitely going to have all four sides like accessible, or three of the four sides accessible. So, yeah, that's kind of what I would say. Plus, some shit happens every now and then where you take a wrong turn, or you haven't gone to that show before and you take the wrong turn and you get off at the wrong exit or something, and you take a 15-minute detour and you're set back in time. Like, don't expect everything to work out perfectly, because I had that happen last year or something. You get up and your alarm doesn't go off at 7 and you wake up and it's like 8 and you're like, oh shit, I'm behind. Luckily, my vehicle's already packed up. Like, definitely make sure all your stuff is in the vehicle. So all you gotta do is get in the vehicle and go.
Don't forget your tent tops.
Yeah, like, that's happened to me. Yeah. Yeah, try to go through that checklist a little bit the day before if you can, so that you're not scrambling the morning of, or, you know, finding that stuff out when you unpack and you start setting up. Like, make sure you have everything you need. Don't forget, like, your money box and stuff like that.
I've forgotten money so many times. What was I going to say? Oh, yes. The first outdoor show that I ever did was a farmer's market. It was in Snohomish, and it was right before I started Leavenworth for the first time. And I think it was on a Thursday. My neighbor called me 3 hours before, and she says, "I'm in a lot of pain. You need to take me to the hospital." And so the hospital's one town over. And so I took her, and it turned out she had an ectopic pregnancy and she was like bleeding internally. And had I not taken her, bad things probably would have happened. But so I took her in her car with her two, like her nephew and her niece. And then her husband drove to the hospital, and then I took his van to our house, and then got my van, and then took it to the farmer's market, and I was like an hour late.
Oh my gosh.
For like, and I remember,
it's like, sorry, family
emergency. I remember
emergency.
It was like my birthday weekend or week. It was so eventful. And I remember him handing the keys to his van, and he says, "Drive it like you stole it." It was great. Thank God Hillary lived. Anyway,
my quickest breakdown time was 30 minutes at a farmer's market, so it was like Rachel was there, table, whatever, fold it up, get it out, 30
You'll
minutes but normally it's I'm taking time, and it's probably like an hour at least on average.
You'll figure out how fast you can do it when it starts to rain.
Yes. Yes, you certainly can.
When you see a storm coming in. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I love this question.
You want to read Ashley's?
Would love to hear how your booth setup has changed over the years. From the very first show to now, I know I shudder at how my first booth setup was. Also, walking that line of how many shows to apply to versus Etsy updates versus consignment shops, and making sure you leave yourself enough studio time to keep up with it all. Pretty much, how much do you manage the time management related with all that?
That last part just made me laugh a lot. All right, do you want to talk with your booth setup? How did it evolve over time?
Oh, I was on mute. Yes, I do. My booth setup has changed so much. So,
was that your first booth setup, the one that like flipped over, the tent flipped over and all
no.
that? No. Or one of your first booth setups? No. That was just a random
weekend. No, it was. Okay, so yeah, because before that I was doing interior shows. And for those doing interior shows, and then I was using, you know, the metal carts that are on wheels that have the notches on them that you can put the metal shelves on? Okay. Yeah. So I had those poles, and then I made myself some cedar shelving units that fit onto those metal poles. They actually looked really cool. They were a little wonky, but they looked really cool. And those were my shelving units for my interior shows, and then when I went to the exterior shows, I was like, this will work. This won't work. For some reason, it wasn't going to work. And so
I mean, rain could be a factor for that for sure if you get the wood and the metal wet and
right. all that. But so anyway,
if it's under,
I did it, but I did it with OSB instead. I like made bigger shelves with the same metal poles with OSB, and they looked fucking terrible. They looked so fucking bad, like...
Did they have support in the middle? Because I feel like OSB is so flimsy. I can imagine when you put pottery on there, it's just gonna weigh.
They
down
weren't
so
that. They weren't that big, but they look so bad. Okay, they didn't look so bad. Yeah, they did. They looked terrible.
Did you paint the OSB or was it just straight OSB?
No, of course it was straight OSB. Are you kidding me? Hello, who are you talking to?
I had an idea it was, but
okay. So for the listeners, that was my first one, and then. I was talking to another potter or something, and then I made those fold-out shelves where they, like, are a V, and then you put the board on top. Mm-hmm. So I made those.
So you have a couple of those that go together, and those are the frames, yeah. basically, and yeah.
They're, like, ladders that fold out. So I made those, and I had boards, and those were black and gray. And then those looked terrible. And one of them almost fell over once.
Why do they look terrible? Is it because the pots just don't go with it?
I mean, they didn't look terrible, I guess. But no, I just didn't make them very well. I'm not very, like, it's taken me a long time to really get a style. Because I don't, like, my style's,
yeah.
I don't know. I just have a weird style. And I just don't I guess I just didn't realize that people cared what things look like. Because I don't care what things look like. if it looks like shit, right. but the product's good, then it's fine. I'm going to buy it. and then I was like, this is dumb. These are dumb. And then I started doing hanging shelves. So.
I feel like I've never actually seen that. I've maybe seen a couple photos, but I don't know that I've seen a good photo or two of this setup. We should definitely share this on Instagram if we have past photos.
Marshall always said that it wasn't a week unless Becca was working on her booth. I literally, like, changing my booth was like my hobby. So, okay, so then I got hanging shelves, okay? So the hanging shelves were boards, and they had holes in them, and they were attached to rope, and then the ropes, you know, hung from the frame of the booth. And that's actually why I ended up getting Easy Up frames, because they were so much sturdier than the frames that I had.
Yeah.
And then, gosh. And then after that.
And then, and then, and then, and then, and then.
And then after that. And then after that, I still had the hanging shelves, but then I was like, I really want my mugs to be on a wall instead of on a shelf. And so then I made this pegboard system mm-hmm. that had the mugs. And that I made a frame out of piping and then hung the frame and attached that to the frame of the booth. This was all also just to tie the booth down so it wouldn't fling over.
So you're basically adding more weight to the frame structure.
Yeah. And then...
Oh my gosh.
And then I finally went with my last and final design, which will be forever and ever, amen, which is two very tall shelving units that are 8 feet long, that have seven shelves, that are three ladders, essentially, and they attach to the frame of the booth, and then the shelves go across, and they create like a whole shelving system on the side of the booth, on each side of the booth, and then there's one hanging shelf in the middle. And that...
And that's all inside... That's inside a 20 by 10 booth.
It could be done on a 10 by 10 booth if it wasn't overnight. I mean, it could be done.
Because you don't want the shelves, like, bordering the edge.
And, right, and one of the shelves has to be attached to the frame pole. They can't just be freestanding. So... first ability.
Gotcha.
And so that really just was super clean. It was all wood finish. It was like super clean setup, just very modern, you know, that like modern wood finish that people are doing right now, the IKEA wood. And
yeah,
it worked really, really well, super well. So
nice. So we'll see that at the Backyard Craft Show, right?
No, we won't.
Or you don't have
that shelving. I don't have the shelving unit anymore. But I would like to make a new shelving unit, actually. So maybe. Yeah. But I like these.
Did you bring the hanging wood, though? The hanging wood shelf?
No, I think I threw that away. But that was just a piece.
I pictured the hanging wood shelf would be like, was that like a live edge piece of wood?
No, it's just a fucking piece of plywood from Lowe's.
Oh.
Very okay. less fancy.
I was picturing like a cool rope and live edge wood, like a slab that looked cool and you stained it and polyed
it. That's extremely heavy.
Oh, the straight wood. It is pretty heavy, actually. I mean, my desk is made out of that.
Yeah.
But I can see like a 1-inch slab.
No, yeah. The backyard show will probably be my farmer's market setup, and I might add a tablecloth.
All right, so my booth setup, my first one was standing shelving unit that was ladders on each side, and then it had a board going across with, I think, six shelves or something like that. And then they were all screwed together. So it did take some time to screw it all together. And I used that because I didn't really have any other option of shelving. You know, you do like the folding shelving or whatever that opens, and you have the shelves that go down. So first one was that on one side, and then I think I had a table on the back side that I put some stuff on, and I had in the front, I had one of those like little bitty like bookshelves that you get from like Big Lots or whatever, that's like small, and I think I just put like a couple vases on it or something and something on top. It was like I was just trying to get as much shelving, linear feet of shelving that I could, and you kind of do whatever you can. And then from there, I kind of went with the table setup. I probably stuck with that for like the rest of that year, which I did like three shows maybe, because that's what I had. And I think I was transporting that in my Altima maybe, before we even got an SUV. I think I like put all that in there, and you got to finagle like what you can fit in there, and it was pretty tough. But and then I went with the folding shelving setup, which was the shelves that they fold together, and it's really shallow. It's probably, you know, 4 inches thick, maybe. You unfold the sides, and then you flip down the shelves. And I think I had two of those in, like, a lighter color wood. I think I got them secondhand from Goodwill or something like that. I think my mom found them. And then put those on top of tables, and then I would use little, like, the
reclaimed wood from my parents' fence that I actually still use some today with the cubby hole kind of thing and like horizontal kind of shelves. And then I would like put pots on top of that. So that's what I was using for quite a bit. And then now I'm pretty much doing the tabletop, two tables, and I've got one of those cubby shelves on one side. And then I pretty much just use like horizontal shelving of, and I like made one that was like a stair step one too, that I think I might make a second one of those that are pretty small to put together. And you just kind of have the feet to hold it. And then you just put the table, yeah, the shelves on top of it that secure it, so it doesn't shift left, yeah, and right. And that's pretty much what I use now. And then I have the like hanging mug rack that I hang off of a piece of pipe that I bungee to my, yeah, tent frame.
Also, it weighs down your tent, which is nice. So,
yeah. I mean, that mug rack's pretty good. And it can, like, sway a little, yeah, bit. It's pretty nice. Got some good compliments on that.
I forgot to say there was one more addition. His eyes are like, what was it?
You have a table in the back, though? What do you pack at?
Oh, yeah. There's, like, a four-foot table in the back. But, and then one hanging... another hanging shelf. Anyway, no. But I, at one point, I decided I want to sell paintings in my booth. At one point, I decided that I wanted to sell paintings. And so instead of having walls for the paintings, I decided that I needed to hang chains. And so I made this system.
Chains?
Yeah, chains. So I made this system out of PVC pipe at 1 foot with T brackets in it, and so the chains hung down. And then I used little S hooks to like hang the pieces on the chains, so it was like every 1 foot, so I could hang them. And then all my paintings were all, mm-hmm, bracketed at 1 foot, and it was really cool, except for when it was windy.
I was gonna say, so they're just free hanging from like one, yeah, spot. There's nothing that they're like, that they can like blow against, no, that's gonna keep them from moving.
No.
Yeah. Did you sell any paintings?
One.
In
my, yeah, shop.
I think I remember you showing that setup.
Yeah. I actually moved it to my shop. A couple
years ago, wasn't it?
I moved it to my shop and hung them that way in my shop. So. Okay. Anyway, okay. Let's. Oh.
What about the rest of that? Yeah,
you
question?
Gotta answer that. That's not for me.
Okay, so this is about how do you balance the whole applying to shows versus Etsy versus consignment. I just overcommit like a son of a bitch. Like, I don't know. Like, I know about how many shows I can do and what I can handle, and I just try to rise to the occasion, make as much shit as I can, and just keep it going. That's not really an answer for you. Sorry. But,
I overcommit.
Well, the thing is, the consignment shops, like, you already got that commitment there.
Yeah.
I mean, you can say, one thing that I can recommend, I guess, try to get your delivery to the consignment shops, like, before the heavy season. Like, yeah, try to get those done. And usually I'll deliver to them in the, before the spring, like, in the late winter, or at, like, August, September. That way it's not right in the middle of the summer, because the summer is usually like the heavier times when I'm doing the shows and like figuring out what inventory I need to restock on, and I'm not making as consistently. So if I had to make a bunch of stuff for consignment and deliver it, it would take a big chunk away from the show. Yeah. So I mean, I would say constantly make stuff. That helps you get more flexibility with, do I have enough stock for shows? Do I have enough stock for an Etsy update? And I wasn't really, I feel like this year I'm going to have a lot more show inventory that I need to keep up with. And then like, if I want to do Etsy updates frequently, they are going to be like when I have the time. But I would say generally Etsy updates fall to the bottom of my list of what I focus on, because that's totally self-guided. Like, when do I want to take photos? When do I want to list all this stuff and do the shipping and stuff? So I do have some items that are pretty consistently on the shop all the time that I'm always making, which are usually the spoon rest, the the shot glasses and stuff like that. So those are always there, but you know, having a batch of feeling like I have to put pressure on myself to say, I need to do an Etsy update every month. I don't do that. I don't know. I just do it when I kind of feel like I can manage it.
Yeah. So. I would also say, I would add to that, because like I have done the whole shows and like doing, you know, flash sales and then also having my own shop to sell in as well. And if you feel like you're getting overwhelmed, try outsourcing some of the stuff to people that may want to like work for you. Like I had employees, and so, you know, they would make my garden stakes, something that they could do. Like, but what's really great is when you're gone, have somebody weigh out all your clay, like do little things that like give little tasks to people, like while you're gone at the shows, that when you come back, you don't have to worry about, like doing that, like the bummer stuff, you know? So,
right.
Yeah. That's a good,
especially I feel really invigorated when I get back from a show, 'cause I'm like, oh, all these mugs sold. And then you're like, okay, I need to start glazing some. So you kind of pull from the bisqueware that's ready to go. And you're like, okay, I need to glaze 4 in this color and 3 in this color. So that's pretty, I get really kind of the juices flowing when I'm like, okay, tomorrow I'm going to be in the studio and I'm going to be glazing some stuff. Or take an extra day off if you need an extra day besides the show day. And, you know, do what you got to do. But it gives me a roadmap of what I need to focus on for that week. And like Becca's saying, if you don't have to worry about weighing out clay...
Yeah, show season is the perfect time to do that because you do have the extra money, typically, to put towards that, you know?
Yeah. All right, so the next question is from Bearded Pottery. How important is your booth? Most shows require a booth picture, but what if I don't have one? Do I just take pictures of my stands, or do I set up in an empty parking lot? Lumber is expensive, so So how nice should I go for booth display? Do you think it helps to sell work if your booth display is more cohesive and pretty? I would say start somewhere and work your way up. Don't feel like you have to hit it out of the park right off the bat.
I think that...
like, I would feel bad if I spent a ton of money and I didn't sell that well. And you're just in it for like $500 that you spent to make this booth look all great. And you spent all this time...
Don't be like Becca and go through a billion shelf designs. you know what? Actually, also, first, I would recommend, if you're looking for a cheap booth setup display, the Ivar shelving units from IKEA are a really good, clean setup. They look nice. They're easy to put together. You need a drill, but that's not hard to bring. And other than that, they just snap in. And the drill's only for the back. There's like a back crossbar. But you could support it. If you did one across your whole booth, you could support it to your frame easily, very easily.
Is that like the natural wood shelving that you can choose where the shelves go vertically?
Yeah. And they have skinnier ones and bigger ones. And those ones are really affordable, like super affordable. Because in reality, you're going to be spending $100 to $200 on shelving units if you do make it from lumber. Because lumber is actually not cheap. Like you said, it's not cheap. So that's what I would recommend if you're looking for a cheap solution that looks really nice, that looks like really clean and modern. And you can do lower shelves too, like waist high. But I will say, Tim C always says, don't put anything below your knees. Because you don't want people to be reaching down. I always put my seconds on the bottom, but I think that's the exception. But yes.
I pretty much stay like waist and up, but like knees and up.
Yeah, but also bringing a table is totally fine too. I think that starting simple at first is great. And yes, you do go out into an empty parking lot, you set up your booth, and you take a picture of it. That is exactly what you do. Unless they let you draw it.
Plus, that helps you know how to pack your car too.
Absolutely.
That gives you practice packing your vehicle.
a lot of my booth setup is limiting based on what I can fit in my vehicle. I'm not going to say every show Rachel has to take her vehicle and drive, because that's not always a reality. She can't always come to the show. So if I rely on two vehicles, or I got to go rent a vehicle now to like, I'm doing what I can do with the vehicle that I have. So that's a lot of what shelving I'm working with.
Andrew, so. My best friend, is like, he only does indoor shows, but he does like big indoor shows, and they have like a 20 by like 10 by 30 or 10 by 40 space or some crazy like that. And he bought a box truck. he bought a box truck with a lift gate, and all of his shelving rolls right into the box truck, and he just wraps around it with saran wrap and rolls it right on in.
Nice.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I just looked up the Ivar shelf. It's $85.
Yeah, I mean, like, and you can add as many shelving units as you want. It's super cheap. They're honestly under $100 for a shelving unit like that. And they look so nice. Like, you really can't go wrong.
It's pretty tall, too.
Yeah, and you can cut them down, too. You can cut it in half. Like, Rebecca has them right in front of me, actually. And they're right behind me.
Cut them in half and put them on a tabletop.
Yeah, because they're like 6 feet tall, like. I think. So she has, no, maybe they're 8 feet tall. She has 4 feet tall here and then 3 feet tall over there. And, yeah, so like you can cut them and like get creative with it. And you can use the top as a table. And, you know, I know many, many, many crafters and showgoers that use them in their booths, and they always look nice. So...
they do look clean.
Yeah. And that wood finish is really in style right now, but you can also, if you want it to look a little fancier, stain it. Stain it a dark brown. But yes, your booth setup is pretty important. How it looks.
And then the last thing he did add on there was he asked about business insurance for shows. Did you have like liability insurance for anything for shows? Some shows that I did required it, some didn't.
I still need to cancel my insurance, so yeah. Yes, I have business insurance regularly, but you can get a business insurance like for a 3-day show from ACT Insurance, I believe.
Yeah, ACTinsurance.com.
Yeah, and you can buy it, and it's pretty cheap. If you need to. If you don't need to, then don't. Yeah.
Yeah, if it's a farmer's market, like, you don't need to spend $40 for business insurance for the day. And, like, so I'm looking into some options with my actual insurance provider for the year, because I had to pay for it a few times last year, so. All right, do you want to read the next one? I think that it kind of relates, but.
Das Asp. To the last Das one. Asp Pottery. Das Ass? No. DASAS Pottery. I've always wondered if a fancier booth sells more than a basic one. I usually do a basic booth setup. I put some wooden crates, small and big ones, on a table as to simulate shelves. And in the summer, I buy some flowers to decorate for pre-Christmas shows. I usually have some gnomes and trees to decorate, but I've seen others, mostly non-ceramic booths, that decorate with lights. Some actually bring IKEA shelving units. Ding, ding, ding. Some bring snacks for customers. Do you think a fancier booth would sell more, or is this taking the focus away from the ceramics? Oh, wait. This was Aletha Bean. No. Okay. Yeah. That's okay. We're good. Yes.
I could see it different ways. Yeah. Like, it could look more, like, more curated and, like, fancier and look like... like, you're creating an atmosphere of your booth versus, you know, sometimes it could be too, like, overkill and distract from
the work. Yeah, I think it definitely depends on the show that you're at, but also it depends on your pieces. Like, if you have very modern pieces, I would say that you need to match that. So if you have modern, higher-end pieces, you probably want to go with a more simple, like, shelving unit that's basic but nice. Like, basic but nice, and it showcases...
because your pieces are going to have a lot of the busyness to them.
and you don't want the shelving to take and overwhelm them.
And then, but yeah, I mean, like, I don't think decorations are important personally. If you're at a, now let's be clear. If you are at a, like junkyard sisterhood traveling pants show with a bunch of middle-aged white women, yeah, you need to decorate your booth. Preferably.
Are you talking about ones where people use a bunch of burlap and they have like carpet rugs in the on the floor and they have lights and all that
stuff? So if you're at a show like that, yeah, you do need to kind of fit that theme. But if you're at a farmer's market or an outdoor show, I think that simple is a little bit better, usually. Clean. Yeah.
The most I do for Christmas and stuff, I have a little 2-foot tree or 1-foot tree that I put on my table and I hang ornaments from it. And it's the same one I use. I don't have lights or anything. And I just put it on my booth in a on a certain little shelf or whatever to add a little Christmas stuff to it. But it's not, other than that, it's the same throughout the whole year.
Yeah. Ryan's setup is really, really good. I'll show my setup too. We'll put it up on pictures. I need to find my pictures. But I personally think that you should be showcasing your pottery instead of making it fancy, but you can do that without making it look too, I don't think basic is the right word, I think clean, simple is good.
Yeah, and I feel like it's a cool challenge for me. I think I'm skilled in the, where the eye moves through the booth, and that's important too, of just thinking of, if somebody's coming to the booth, what are they looking at? And to keep your eye moving to the different pieces, see, like, what colors are near what, and then, like, are the spoon rests on the tabletop so they can kind of see the different colors and, like, what they're used for, and then they move their eye over to the shot glasses or the air plants and, like, all those different things of keeping your eye moving kind of up and down on the table is a way to build some vertical attention. That's not so
also
flat.
Have a basket that that people can put their hands in. We used to have this saying, Marshall was the photographer that was always, I don't know, I always next to Marshall because I like him, but he's a cool guy, and he would always say, you know, the longer you can have the people be in your booth, the more you'll sell. And so one day I was like, the longer they stay, the more they'll pay.
Oh gosh. That was great with his cone.
Yes. So my friend did like a video of my booth, and he's like, welcome to Five Lines Pottery. Remember, the longer you stay, the more you'll pay. He's like, keep your hands and ears inside the booth at all times. But anyway,
great.
Anyway, with that point, try to get like a basket, you know, fill up small pots in a basket, make it approachable for people to pick up, touch.
Yeah, I have those little Michaels crates that are only maybe 4 or 5 inches tall, and I put a bunch of spoon rests in there. I actually got bigger ones this year because I felt like I was still bringing extra spoon rests, and by the time you lay them out on the table, your little tray is empty. So give them something that they could flip through. I use the same thing with the shot glasses. I throw a whole bunch of 50 shot glasses in a bin. Plus, it's easier. It goes in the car. It goes right on the table. You don't have to, like, unload anything. You just put it out there and let people pick through it. It's fun. So, you probably did the same thing with your mise en place, didn't you?
I just left them in the container,
A bin or something. Okay, Aletha. Do you find that a tightly packed table with lots of options does better, or a curated collection? Definitely don't put every single thing that you have at the show out on the table.
Unless you have a 10x20 booth, like, and then it doesn't even fill it if you do.
Yeah. Yeah. I try to have some back stock so that I can pull from, but also the whole visual interest of, like, don't overwhelm their eyes with every single thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes more options is not better. Some customers need fewer options so as to not overwhelm them. I mean, I have customers that are picking through shot glasses and they're spending 15 minutes picking 3 shot glasses. Like, that happens too.
Yeah. Totally. I feel like we answered a lot of these questions on the last show. The next
ones down below.
Also, yeah, wait, we did answer in, that in Aletha, in your, also in regards to your question, I find that sometimes too many options is not great. So shows are a really great time to figure out what people are attracted to and start making more of those items and like really narrowing down your style and your pieces. Like,
is that as in like types, different numbers of forms that you make?
Yeah.
And you also figure out, like, I had a show where I put a whole bunch of planners on a shelving unit, and I used half the table for that, and one planter sold. Just because you have all those out there doesn't mean it's going to sell. Plus, it just wasn't intuitive what it was.
Right.
So keep that in mind of, like, is it obvious? Like, can I put a spoon on this thing and people get that it's a spoon rest?
Yeah.
Or put a succulent that's inside of, like, a plastic pot and just stick it inside of your pot to know that it's a planter, you know?
Cool. Okay. What do we got? We have a few more.
Yeah, some of these were from the Instagram list. That's why they, some of them are repetitive, but.
I don't, please break.
Do you want to start?
Please break down types of shows, guilds, galleries, schools, markets, and how they differ. I am not, this is not my question, so go for it if you'd like. I don't know.
We already kind of talked about like farmers markets and stuff like that. I would say those are going to be lower average price items. Like, you're based on where I live, the average price of something I'm going to sell there is probably $30 and under.
Yeah, that's reasonable.
They're not going to be spending, they're not going to buy a big, huge vase or something on average. They're not going to spend $75 if they're going to pick up their groceries for the week. And typically the thing for that. The other markets, like outdoor monthly things, and people are out drinking beer at the event and hanging out with the family for the weekend, like, you might sell, they might be gift giving. I would say the average price is probably a little bit higher that they're willing to spend, maybe $35, something like that. They might be buying multiples. And let's see, guilds, galleries. I'm not sure about the guilds thing. I don't know if that's like you're selling amongst peers that are also in a clay guild.
Would the guilds kind of be maybe like, that's what that would means? I don't even know what a guild is, but I'm like, I'm just thinking of like the Boulder Pottery Guild, or wouldn't like,
yeah, I think that's like the Clay Alliance is a guild. Yeah.
Or like the Queen City Clay is kind of like a guild, I suppose, in a way.
Yeah, I would say they're more like a gallery if they're selling at Queen City Clay. They have a guild. But yeah, it's like a community of the same peers, so you're probably selling amongst other clay artists in the guild. And I would say people that come to those shows are going to know what they're coming for. Like, they're coming for clay. They really love clay. So you're probably going to sell some oddball stuff that people gravitate to that maybe you wouldn't sell at a typical show with people that don't have a lot of ceramics. Right. And yeah, the sales could vary because you're in competition with a lot of other potters that are there or clay artists that are there. So it could be kind of a high or low depending on where your prices sit. I would say that's where your prices in relation to your neighbors and stuff like that matter more potentially. But also your style needs to be unique enough to set yourself apart. Don't be changing your prices and stuff based on what their prices are. But
yeah,
like that's where there's more uncertainty of with other peers of the same medium near you. Galleries. Usually galleries, fewer inventory. You're not going to get as many sales super quickly just because the gallery foot traffic, I feel like, is more slow over time. But galleries, I don't know, that could also be like Indigenous is a gallery, but they have a lot of foot traffic because they're a retail shop. Or I'm thinking of galleries, like gallery showings, where it's like an exhibition. I don't know. I mean, they're going to take a cut of it for sure. I'm not sure about the school shows. The school shows might be like, there's a lot of high schools around here.
I feel like school
shows
are where it's at, man. Like,
I feel like that's kind of like crafty a lot of times.
Yeah, but sometimes you can fucking kill it at school shows. because yeah. all those kids' parents. I feel
like
the school
shows are like a step up from like a church
yes.
show.
Yes. Depends. It depends on if you go to the church of the church show, because if the if you go to the church of the church show, then the church show is above the school show. But also, if your kid is in the school, you're above the church show, because then you know all the parents. The more people you know at the show, the more you'll sell.
Right. Yeah, I feel like the school ones and the church ones are, you're going to get some other crafters and non, I guess, artist level work. Booth fee's going to be cheaper, yeah. probably. Similar to the farmer's market booth fee. I think that's pretty good. That's probably a good rundown there. Next one, how do you find shows to apply when all the website, this is what made me laugh, when all the local websites seem to be out of date? That's my biggest struggle in finding contacts locally. Like I was saying in the last one, Facebook is a good resource. I feel like if they don't have a good website, they don't have like a Facebook business page about their show, they don't have events on social media about, like, I'm a little iffy with some of those shows and applying to them, because if they don't realize that they can reach a bigger audience of people by having events mm-hmm. on Facebook or something, like, I don't know. I feel like
you're judging a show by its Facebook. Sell there.
Are you not judging a show by its website and how good no. they're like keeping up with
some
it?
Of the best shows I've seen don't
I
have
sometimes
those.
Do but if it's like the 50th annual,
yeah,
I mean, it's got its reputation, but if it's a show that you haven't heard a lot about and it hasn't been around very long, and they don't have a Facebook yeah. page for their event, and they don't have a website, or the website's out of date,
yeah,
like, I don't know how big their audience is already.
I think that also, what's that Facebook group that the artist show?
Are you talking about Art?
Yeah,
Fair
Art
Reviews?
Fair Reviews. Go on that one. See if they
Art Show Reviews.
Yeah, see. You can also just do a shout out to a bunch of the potters around you and say, like, even if you like went on to Clay Buddies and was like, hey, I live here, does anybody know of some good shows in this area, you know?
Yeah,
that might be helpful. Yeah.
Yep. And then the next person was like, is there a resource with a big old monster list of shows in their deadlines?
Yeah, there is, but we don't know what it is.
I don't know what it's called. I've compiled my own list. That's my monster list. So if somebody's in the Cincinnati area and you want to know some shows or whatnot, send me a DM and I will send you the list. I'll even tell you about the shows if I've done them before. I'll give you some honest feedback about them.
Let's see. I would just use Google. I literally just said art shows near me. And events, Broad Ripple Art Fair, Indianapolis Art Shows, Indie Arts Guides.
Talbot's probably going to be on there.
Exhibition, Indianapolis, Indiana Art Events, Arts and Craft Festivals. Yeah, like, I just found like 20 yeah. on the Google. So
there you go. Take that list on Google, put it into a note that has a list of all of them chronologically throughout the year, and then go to each of those different sites and look up when the deadlines are, when the applications are due, and go that route. I say that's a good starting point. Don't feel like everybody's going to give you that list and it's going to be done. I feel like you have to kind of do some of that research based on your area yeah. and what kind of shows cater to the types of events you want to be doing.
Fine art fair and craft show listings. The number one juried fine art fair listing website promoting attendance at art fairs, craft shows, and art festivals nationwide. It's called artfaircalendar.com.
There you go.
Virtual art shows, best art fairs, Midwest art fairs, Chicago, Florida, Michigan, Mid-Atlantic, New England, New York. There you go. Just use your Google.
Do the Googles.
Use the Google. I just did this live. Like.
Yep.
Okay, cool. What do you do with people who keep saying they love your work, but it's too expensive?
I just say thanks so much for the compliment. I appreciate it.
I don't assume any. You can't assume that everybody's going to love your stuff and be able to afford it. There's a market that can afford it and likes your
it
stuff.
It depends, like, on how, yeah.
I feel like they're not. Depends on how they say it, I guess, but.
It depends on how they say it. If they're snotty about it, I'll be like, sucks for you.
Like, you'll say that?
I'm sure I've said that. I'm positive. I'll be like, yeah, oh well. One time this lady asked me for a discount, and she was like, I really love these sponge holders, but I just, you know, I just think they're too expensive. And I was like, you know what? There's a lot of work that goes into that, and they're just the right price. And they were not even too expensive. I should have probably had them $10 more. And she's like, well, would you do a deal for two? And I was like, no, I won't. And she's like, okay. And then she picked him up and brought him to my table. And she goes, good for you. Oh, and then when she brought him, she said, are you sure you won't do a deal? And I was like, no. And she's like, good for you for sticking to your guns. And I was like, what the fuck just happened?
And she bought both of them?
Yeah, she bought
two. Full price. Full price.
And it was nice. Like an old lady, and she was looking for a deal. Yeah, no, I would say if they say your work is too expensive, you say, just say, you know what, it's fine. I'm worth it. Like, I'm worth the money. Like, don't.
I usually, if they'll say something like that, it depends on what it is. But if it's like a mug, I'll say, well, I have a lot of other things that are cheaper than a mug.
Yeah.
Like, if you want something in that color, like, I have spoon rests that are $12 or $15. Like, that's affordable. You got shot glasses that are $8 or $9. Like, there are things under that price that are affordable, yeah, that are like an entry point.
Now,
that hopefully can be a compromise if they don't want to spend that. Yeah. But
if somebody says they're too cheap, if somebody says, wow, these are really cheap, you say, I can make it more expensive if you'd like.
Like, name your price.
And then you say, what do you you better buy it now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, Tim C. had some really good pointers on, like, people, like, be backs, you know, ones that are like, oh, I'll be back. He would give them a little coin that had a discount on the back of it. And he was like, okay, you can carry this coin, and if you bring it back, you get 10% off, 20% off, or something like that. I thought that was a good. Yeah, he
idea.
Made like little discs, and he has a.
They're ceramic ones, yeah. So it's not just like a random coin.
Right. So
like
he they would
out.
Like feel it, and it was like tactile. So, yeah. Tim C's got some really good stories about him starting off and doing stuff. So. Okay.
All right, Shelby had another one. How do you package orders bought at the markets? I don't know if we talked. We might have talked about this.
I think
last week,
did.
Didn't we?
Yeah, I wrap it in brown paper.
Maybe we didn't because we talked about the prep and stuff.
Oh, you know what? We didn't really like. We talked about the bags. We talked about brown.
We talked
bags.
About packing, like getting ready.
Yeah.
For the show, though.
So I use brown butcher paper. We did talk about this a little bit. I use brown butcher paper.
Yeah.
I used to just crinkle up the brown butcher paper. Now I pull it out, rip it, lay it flat. I roll it, like if it's a bowl or a cup, I will roll it and fold it over, and then I tape it closed. If it's a mug,
I tape it. Are you putting it in a bag and stuff, yeah, too?
Yeah, like...
Why do you tape it?
It looks nice and it stays together. So, okay. Like, so, and like, when I have 3 pinch pots, because they're 3 for $15 or whatever. No, 3 for $18. I fold the pinch pot in, and then I put another one on top, and then I fold that over, and then I put another one on top, and then wrap it up, and then tape it closed so that they don't fall apart and that they're all snug. Same with, like, garden stakes. I would always roll them up and wrap them and then tape it. And then, but mugs, I just kind of fold it, the paper into the mug, and then put it into the bag. What about you?
Gotcha. Yeah, I think we talked about this last week. I have that 16-inch or 14-inch roll of the masking paper, mm-hmm, from Lowe's or whatever. I pull it out, rip it,
and wrap the piece and do the folding, kind of like wrapping a sub sandwich sort of thing.
You know what I thought was a really interesting way of wrapping? When I went to the Danny's workshop, which, by the way, you should still sign up. We went to his shop, and then he sold us some stuff. And he takes paper, and he crinkles it up, and he wraps it around the rim. And I was like, that is extremely protective.
He wraps before he wraps the whole thing,
he doesn't even wrap the whole thing. He just wraps the rim. And then maybe the bottom.
Is that like a mug? It was a bowl.
Like a bowl. Anyway, moving on. Okay, moving on. In Bachelor Pottery, in this COVID world, what precautions, safeguards are y'all taking to stay safe? Keep customers safe, make money, and stay sanitary. I tried to stay near the back of the booth and have mesh walls for airflow, but what else can be done? Some shows are planning 6 to 10 feet between booths, but others are planning on packing them in and hoping for the best. I thought that there was pretty scientific evidence that airflow kind of just takes COVID away. If it's at all breezy or windy.
Yeah, I don't know about the mesh walls part, but the rest of it, I mean, I pretty much do the... You didn't really sell it in any shows.
Yeah,
I didn't
do COVID, so I mean, I did in the store, okay. And we always wore masks, obviously, and sanitizer.
Yeah, I did 20 shows last year, so the shows that I did, the most protected one, I guess, that I did that had the most precautions was the farmer's market, because they didn't want customers interacting with the product.
That makes sense.
But that was a lot of food and stuff, so they kind of had that standard across all the booths. So what we had to do, we had to have a customer interface table, and only one customer could approach at a time. So I had a 4-foot table at the front, and then they would interact with me there, and they would kind of point to what they wanted behind the booth. For pottery, it's pretty tactile. You kind of got to handle it a little bit. So some people would approach if they wanted to come look. It was kind of look with your eyes, mm-hmm. kind of thing, and don't touch. So they would kind of come around sometimes and look at the hanging mug rack, and there's plenty of space in the booth, so I can space out a little bit and they can look. But I personally am not worried about transmission through surfaces. I think there was some science about that, but what we would do is once an hour they would actually shout out hey, it's 10 o'clock, time to sanitize your surfaces. So we would normally take a spray on the table or whatever and sanitize that area and sanitize your hands. So we would do that once an hour. That was the most overkill that we did with shows. And then anybody in line would stand 6 feet away mm-hmm. from the person that's currently interfacing with the business. So that was the most safeguard that was going on. Some people at the booth would put rope around their tent legs and make sure nobody came inside their tent.
Caution.
That was a little overkill for me, but so that's what we were doing. But all the other shows that I did for regular art shows and stuff, I would do the tables on the outside edge of the booth and I would be inside the booth. So there would be at least 3 feet between me and the customer because of the table depth. And then I have all this space behind me. I have 5x5 of space behind me in the booth to kind of move away if I need to and take my U space, and people aren't coming inside of a U shape and being right on top of each other. So
that would be what would,
people could kind of work on the boundary. So that's what I would recommend.
Yeah.
Plus, if you got 6 feet between your neighbor, you basically have a corner booth. Everybody has a corner booth when you're 6 feet from a neighbor.
Right. Utilize it.
This is to your benefit that you have a great option. Plus, some of the thing is people are walking by. If all they got to do is approach the edge of your booth, that is very low effort.
Yeah.
The one of the biggest things with a booth is they have to enter the booth, and then once they enter the booth, then they can start looking and they're going to stay there longer. But if it's on the perimeter and all they got to do is approach a 10x10 booth and they hit the edge of your tent and they're already there, then it's easier. I mean, I keep the sanitizer. You mask up all day. You might bring a second mask because you're talking so much and you're sweating and all that. So, I mean, I feel like that's as good as you could do. And, if you want to go hardcore with it and say,
don't touch anything without sanitizing your hands first. You could always do that. Say, like, don't touch anything before you sanitize. Or if you want to put all the stuff behind you and make sure that they go through you and you handle stuff. And, like, I feel like that's overkill personally, but, yeah. I mean, I still made pretty good sales. People are out and about because they're wanting to do stuff.
Yeah.
And I feel like even more this year it's going to be that way because people are going to be vaccinated. They're going to be feel more confident about going out and about. And, yeah, I feel like it can only be more lax this year than it was last year.
You would think. One would think. One would hope. One would think.
But we'll see. I mean, it will differ with what the shows end up doing with the spacing of booths away from each other. And because they might be getting back to, you know, can we fit more booths in there so that we can make more money on the booth sales and, like, advertise more and all that stuff. Because they're taking a big hit by only having half the number of booths in their show.
Mm-hmm.
And they can only do so much, but yeah, we'll see what happens. And I don't know if they're gonna have limitations of, like, how many people could be in the show at once. That also has an effect on the number of people at your booth and congestion and all that stuff.
Yeah. Cool. But,
yeah.
Shall I read the next?
Sure.
I did my first event last week, very small. A very small show with 10 vendors at a brewery. That sounds fun. Good way to test and see if it was something I wanted to do again. I didn't sell much, but I learned a lot, so I recommend everyone try one. I agree. maybe find a smaller, cheaper entry fee event to test the waters. My question is, I had quite a few planters, brought a few succulents to include if someone wanted to buy a planter. And a succulent, actually had a planter kit, which included succulents, soil, and lava rocks, but it didn't seem to do so well. Do you recommend selling plants with your pots? You've done this. I would not recommend selling plants with my pots because I don't want to keep them alive. But that's, you know, that's just a personal preference.
Yeah, I've had mixed results with this. I would say it definitely depends on your event. If it's at a brewery, I feel like 10 vendors at a brewery, people are out and about, they're getting beer, they're hanging out, they're looking at the artisans, but they're probably not going to spend more than like $30 maybe. And do they want to carry around a bag with a plant and whatever while they're drinking? Right. Maybe not. I don't know. I had some good results with this when I was selling the macrame with the planters. Yeah. And the plants, but it is a lot of work up front to plant everything and sell it all together, as well as you have to transport it safely so the plants don't get messed up. And, like, it is possible. I kind of like how you did the planter kit, though. That's a fun option to do in the right setting. Like, if you... That might actually be a cool idea if you could find a local, like, plant shop. Maybe there's a plant shop that you could do, like, a pop-up at. Maybe there's a specific day of the week. Like, Bellevue has Final Friday, and, like, I could do this at Codico one day if I wanted to sell at that shop. Like, they have plants. If I wanted to do this, you can imagine going there, say, you know, talking with them, being like, hey, can I do a pop-up on a Friday night when you have your art walk or your business walk or First Friday or whatever? And you set up outside. Maybe you have some plants out there. You have your planters, and people can, like, make their own setup, pick their plant, pick their pot. And then they get all their kit and they kind of do it themselves and put it all together at home. Or maybe it's a kid's activity or something like that. Like, in the right setting, I could see that doing really well.
It'd be fun to, like, buddy up with a plant store at a show and be like, hey, can we be put next to each other? And be like, if you buy a plant here, you can plant your pot over here. That'd be cool.
Yeah. It was funny. At one of the shows I did last year, it was a different macrame artist, but they had a whole booth of macrame. And I actually I kind of talked with her at the end of a show one month, and then the next month I gave her like 10 bowls of mine and was like, hey, can we put some of these bowls in your plant, in your macrame? Give them a little more context and people could see it, and then they could buy it. So we did that, and she just, like, paid me cash at the end of the day. It was like, hey, we sold 4 of these bowls. Here's the other 2 back or whatever.
Nice.
So that was pretty cool. But yeah, I've done the plants. I've not done the plants. Not doing the plants, as long as you have a sample so people, like, know what they're looking at.
Yeah, I think one sample is good, personally.
Yeah. But also I've had, you have like 10 planters with pots in the, or with plants in them, and they don't sell, and you bring them home and you got to keep watering them, and then you take them to the next show and they don't sell, or you sell two of them, and they, you just, it's just the endless cycle of taking them.
So what we did, because, so I never sold planters. Well, I did sell a few planters, but what I specifically sold was garden stakes. And so we had Mr. Basil, and Mr. Basil was in one of my planters, and it lived at my friend's house, and she used Mr. Basil every week. So she would take Mr. Basil home after the show and keep him alive, and then she'd bring it back and he'd be,
and you would just stick a few stakes in there. Yeah, I'd stick a
basil plant stake in there. And then it turned into a cactus because she killed Mr. Basil.
Oh. Nice.
But yeah, I definitely recommend having like one pot that shows what it is.
The only other plant thing is I sell the air plants with the planters. You do have to keep those alive, so they do take some time, but they're less
maintenance.
They're less maintenance, I would say. Because they don't have soil and all that stuff. Like, they're easy to water. They're easy to keep alive. They are in, like, a bundle. So, like, they can take up some space on the table and stuff. But I think those are eye catchers. Like, those grab people in. And then they can pick and choose and, like, mix them up and put them with whatever pots they want. Like, that's fun.
Yeah.
So, that's a good option out there. And they're pretty cheap. Like, if you lose a air plant, big whoop. It costs, like, $1 or $1.50. Mm-hmm. Like, whatever.
All right, Aletha, you got our last two questions.
Yeah.
Is it worth giving up your Saturdays to be at the show physically versus letting an online presence be all? Versus, like, doing an online show, right, or sale?
Yeah, I don't think she's talking about doing, like, a virtual show.
Right.
Which I never did last year, like, I didn't see any benefit in doing a virtual show where they cancel the show and they do virtual. It depends on your personality. Like, I like the interaction with people. I like setting up my booth. I think it's fun to do that. I would much rather go to a show, or I would much rather pack up my vehicle, go to a show, unload my vehicle, set it all up in a nice fashion so that people can look at it and sell all day, and then pack it all up and bring it home, than photographing all the work, listing all the work, advertising for all the work. Like, I'd much rather do that.
Yeah, it's definitely a personal preference. I got to the point where I was making the same or more selling online than I would at a show. And so I was like, fuck that. Like, you know, it's like, I mean, I love going to the shows and stuff like that. But at the same time, if I don't have to leave my bed and I can, like...
What do you mean not leave your bed? You still have to do all that work to get it ready.
But you're, I just can sit in my bed while I'm
you
doing
hit,
it.
You hit, I set this thing lot. You're talking about like photo editing and listing and all that stuff? Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'm just used to being on my computer so often throughout the week that I'm like, any time away, I'm all for it. As well as I work from home every day, so I don't see anybody.
And I like got to the point where it was like so easy to do all the editing and like the photos and stuff like that. So it was just like wham, bam, done. And I'm like... I approach all things the same, so it was not fancy when I would do an online update. You know, it was like, whatever. Yeah. And then...
Yeah, I'm trying a little bit more every now and then, like, doing some story things, like, putting a few things on stories and seeing if they sell, and it's, like, a small trickle of work instead of the whole big online update, because, like, sometimes that could... At least for me, I don't sell out as soon as I put it up there, so I kind of get... a little bit sad when it's like, it doesn't sell. Sad. Like, it's been sitting there for a week. Like, I went overboard. I tend to always go overboard with, like, I'm going to put six of these, and I'm going to photograph, like, eight different of this color and see which ones sell. And it's like, you sold, like, five pieces. Like, I did all that
I did
work.
That, too.
So.
When I tried to sell my earrings and I didn't sell any of them. I sold one.
Yeah.
Anyway. But I knew that was going to flop. Okay, Aletha, with the last question. How do you feel about having someone else man the booth? Like Ryan having Rachel take over. I feel fine.
Yeah, if it's a short period of time, I'm fine. I mean, I'm not going to, like, leave and then have her, you know, do the, have the booth for, like, hours on end. I mean, I'll trust her to, like, if I got to go to the bathroom or walk away and go do a loop around and, like, check on some people and hang out, but...
Rebecca's Hi. Here!
Hi. We got a visitor! Hi!
Yeah, I have no problems with that. Val has watched my booth many times, and other people. I've had a 12-year-old watch my booth. I have no problem with it.
I think the sales part, I feel like every time... I feel like I need, like, a cheat sheet for Rachel. We were gonna, like, school her. She was gonna have, like, index cards or something. Like, here's your glaze combo. Do you know what it is? Because habitually she will get orders, and then she'll put it in there, and she'll be like, I didn't know what glaze it was, so I just did this. And they gave me, like, I think I rang it up right. And
the
analytics are off a little bit, but it's minuscule. Like, she'll sell stuff. And
yeah, you're definitely, like, you take more notes than I do, so they could have given half my booth away, and I wouldn't have known.
Typically hands off. Like, they pick it up and they go ring it up somewhere else, and then you
wrap it up. Like, in Leavenworth in the summers, we would, when it's really fucking hot, we would go down to the river. Like, six of us would be like, we're leaving. And everybody
during the show?
And everybody else would man their, like, the other booths, like their neighbors or whatever, and we'd go down to the river, jump in the river, and then come back up.
Oh my gosh.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a pretty casual show. I would not expect that at most of your shows that you're gonna sell at.
Rebecca's over here, she's like, I wanna do that show. What the fuck? Yeah, no, Mary's was the director, and she'd be like, let's go down to the river.
Wait, that's the organizer. The organizer of the show?
And she'd be like, she has these, like, bright pink track shorts, and she's 75 or something like that, and she's like, I brought my swimsuit today.
That's great.
Oh, so funny. And then also one time when we were down there, I found there was these people floating by, and they had a flamingo koozie for cans. And so I was like, oh my god, it's a flamingo, and this girl let me have it. And so then I got a mascot for my booth, and his name was Mango the Flamingo. And and the reason his
Mango,
name
the, Flamingo.
The reason his name was Mango was because this little girl came up to my booth, and I would always float it in the water dish, because I'd always have a water dish for dogs, and I'd float the inflatable flamingo in the water dish, and this little girl comes up, and she goes, "Hi, Mango." Hi, Mango! Mango! Hi! And then she, like, went into the bathroom, and then she comes back out, and she says, bye, Mango! And so we named him Mango the Flamingo.
Oh my god.
Anyway, there's your fun story for the end.
Jeez. You had that good idea at the end of the last one we talked about, where you were like, somebody else should man your booth for the day and, like, sell for
a
you.
A buddy show.
Buddy show.
We're going to do it.
I think you asked me before how Rachel does in the booth. And I'm like, yeah, it's totally a personality thing of, like how you engage with somebody and, like, how you're kind of, like, on the edge, but you're not, like, communicating unless they look like they want communication, and making sure you talk loud enough so they can hear what you're saying, but, you know, because she tends to talk softly, so.
Yeah, you gotta say, Rachel, kick it into flight attendant mode.
I can't hear you.
Flight attendant mode, activate.
Yeah. All right. Do we have anything else? Was there any other pottery show? We didn't really talk about, there was something else we didn't talk about that we mentioned last week. Did we talk about how to pack up your boxes?
We did. We talked about
that. Cardboard and all that stuff. I mean, you said something about, like, the tactics of selling.
Oh.
I don't know if we wanted to, like, high level. How do you typically, maybe a
good... Well, you never sit down. That should be said.
Yeah, I stand up the whole time pretty much. I do have the chair that's like a director's chair that's higher, so I can sit down. But my one other thing is my tables have... I have the bed risers underneath them, the plastic bed risers that lift them up like 4 to 6 inches.
Yeah.
Depending on which risers I have, so that the table's at like 34 to 36 inches high. Because if I was down in a chair, like a lawn chair, like I do not like doing that. Because it feels like such an effort to stand up and talk, and you're like talking up to them, which is kind of weird. I'd rather look like eye to eye with them, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
So I pretty much stand up the whole time and like don't wear sunglasses so that they can like see your eyes, and it's not like, I don't know. Like that's typically what I tend to do.
Yeah. I don't think you should ask me this question.
Why not? How do you do it? Because not everybody's going to do what I want to do.
When they walk in, I'm usually sitting down. Sometimes I'm painting.
You're also, it's a 10 by 20 booth, so it's a really 10
by
20
booth, and it's from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. for 3 days in a row. So, Marshall stands up the whole time. And he has a director chair, and he's in the back, and he like sits his chair outside of his booth if he does sit. I sit in the back, and I have an umbrella. and then I say, if you need any help, let me know. Everything is microwave and dishwasher safe. That's it.
Nice.
And if they ask questions,
I mean, some people like to browse that way. Yeah, they don't.
They
don't want to feel like they're being sold to and all that stuff.
Yeah, we definitely took a very less selly approach, and I'm sure that if I tried to sell more, I would. But I'm just not that type of personality. That's pretty much it. I try to say hi to everybody. But, like, some people don't say hi to you, so you're just like, hi.
Yeah. So you are, like, looking up occasionally. You're not just, like, laser-focused into
your painting not. And your head's absolutely down. Not. And I don't get up and walk within the booth because my booth is a U-shape, so it does get kind of, like, it can get crowded, you know, if there's a bunch of people.
And you're not... You're not restocking because it sounds like your booth's big enough that you have all the stock out.
And then
so.
I love how I'm saying this like it's present tense. This is all past tense. And, but, you know, obviously, like, if people are buying stuff, like, I've had lines through my booth, you know, and if people, this was obviously pre-COVID, if people are buying stuff and you're, like, talking and then you're just like, I love it when it's super busy and you're, like, looking around people and you're like, yeah, so that one is blah, 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 and that one is blah, 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 and I'll be with you in a second. Hold on, I've got to wrap this. And was this, blah, 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 blah. And it, like, when it's super busy, it's fucking great.
Nice. I just feel like I'm super focused on that customer that's checking out right there so that I'm, like, showing them attention and, like, rapping while I'm talking to them because it's the last interaction they're going to have with me. I don't want to, like, talk around them to somebody. I feel like I'm passing them up or, I kind of like, I think customers like being able to self-serve when they can and like somebody else has the attention.
Mm-hmm. I like to compliment
and then
people
they can just, it's nice when they're just standing there with like a couple things in their hand. They're like ready to check out.
Like, I'm ready.
And they're like, all right, I'm next. I'm on deck.
I also, I'm a huge fan of complimenting people just generally. I saw somebody with cool hair.
What are you complimenting them on?
Oh, like anything. Like they come in and I'm like, dude, your shirt is freaking rad. Or like, you have to be genuine though. Like, and I usually am, but, or like they have a really cool haircut or they have sunglasses. Like I literally screamed across my booth, dude, where'd you get your sunglasses? You know, like I think that that's also fun. You know, you can't scare them, but like saying, hey, I really like your shoes. Like find something that you like about their appearance. don't say like your smile is great or your eyes are great, because then you look like you're flirting with them. One time this lady was sitting next to me and I couldn't help it. I was like, dude, I just have to tell you the best posture I've ever seen in my entire life. I just want to let you know. And she's like, thanks. I was like, yes.
See, that's like an odd compliment.
Don't do that. Like, don't do that. She was not shopping with me. But yeah, no, I think that complimenting people, and it opens up the conversation, and you know.
Plus, people like to talk about themselves, right?
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah, I'll be with Rachel at an art show or something. People always compliment on her, whatever she's wearing, like her dress or whatever.
Because your wife is so cute. She's a cutie patootie.
But they're like, I love your dress. I love your earrings.
She's also very hot, too. Your wife. As as an example of her on her birthday, I was like, whoa. Anyway, moving on.
I feel like women compliment women a lot more, and it's pretty lax, and it's like it's not creepy or anything.
Yeah, that's true. Like, if you're a male, like, you really have to choose your words wisely, I suppose, especially if you're complimenting a female, because you don't want to act like you're hitting on them. I look like a lesbian, so people think that I'm hitting on them regardless, but, you know.
The thing now, I guess, is, like, you can compliment them on their mask. It's like, oh, that's a cool mask. It's like, you know,
I like
whatever.
Your glasses.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm more of a... I do talk to people more, but I am, like, available there. Like, I'm not on my phone. I pretty much am not on my phone at all, unless I'm, like, checking somebody out. And, I mean, if I'm posting to Instagram or something, I'll try to do that during a slow time when I'm sneaking it and getting it on there and then putting my phone down and not, like, constantly looking at it. Because I feel like approaching a booth and somebody's looking down at a phone, it just seems like they're, you know, they're not involved or whatever, you know. They're not attentive. Especially if you're just sitting down and looking down at a phone or, like, completely zoned into whatever you're doing and looking at, when you can't just glance up and it feels like they're, like, interrupting you.
Yeah.
So I'll usually kind of let them pick stuff up, and I might kind of look at their face to see if they're confused or kind of like, oh, that's interesting. Or they're looking at mugs and they're kind of looking around, and I'm like, oh, I've got a mug rack right here that you can pick from. There's a lot of different styles on there, and I'll kind of point them around. But
I like to have an item too that you can talk about that's like really interesting to you personally. So like for me, it was my wine glasses. They'd pick up a wine glass and be like, yeah, those are wine glasses. They are thicker at the base. They have a thin rim, so it's like drinking out of glass. They don't tip over in grass. You know, and like you can have this like spiel about this one item, and they're like, wow, that's so cool. Like, it's designed well, you know.
Yeah.
So like really invest in at least one or two items that you can talk about, you know. I can't talk about a mug.
Yeah, that's a great
idea. I cannot talk about a mug. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's a fucking mug. Like, who cares? Like, you know, but I can get really super stoked about those wine glasses or like a certain glaze. Like, they'll pick it up and I'll be like, dude, isn't that glaze fucking rad? Like, bragging about yourself in a way that's like, I was so surprised when that came out of the kiln and that glaze. It's so cool. Like, validating them picking it up, you know?
Yeah, that's a great idea to do that for sure. I probably have 3 to 4 spiels.
Yeah.
Like the one last year was the shot glasses in the air plants. Because that like draws them in, right? And they're like, oh my gosh, those are so cute. And then they're flipping through them. And I'm like, yeah, you could flip through the shot glasses and like pair them however you want. Pick your plant, pick your pot. And I was like, yeah, these kind of started out with I make, you know, 300 of these and COVID hit. And I had all these in stock, and they don't really sell that well online, just the shot glasses. So I was like, what's a way that I can spice them up? So I bought a bunch of air plants wholesale, and I, you know, sold them together as a pair. And then I bring them to shows, and you can kind of go through and pick what you want at a show, which is really nice. So, like, that's a good little spiel of saying, like, hey, I had to adjust with COVID as well as
hey, this is a fun thing that I kind of stumbled upon as a way to get rid of stock that I had a lot of. And then, this, you know, similar with the spoon rests, like they're looking and they're like, what am I going to use this for? And
you have got ideas.
Like a list of 4 to 5 things that you could use it for.
Yeah. Like, so let's see, my 3 hot ticket items were wine glasses, pinch pots, and garden stakes. And pinch pots are super easy to sell because they're like, what's a pinch pot? And you say, oh, it's like a pinch of this, a pinch of that. You can put your salt or whatever. And, or I especially love the people that know ceramics and they walk past and they go, that's not a pinch pot. Oh my God. And they're like super snotty about it. And they're like, that's not a pinch pot. And like, clearly it is. It's just not your pinch pot. And then, like, the garden stakes had really funny sayings on them, and you make sure those are, like, super visible. And then they can, like, rummage through them. You know, like, please don't die. Or, you know, plant. Or,
I wet my plants.
Or... Damn it. I think one of them said damn it something, but yeah, things that people can laugh at are really good. Little signs.
Yeah. What do you do if there's, sometimes it's interesting with Rachel being back there too. Usually I try not to talk directly with her a lot when there's customers and stuff, just because I don't want to seem I'm disengaged. Usually she'll just be sitting there reading anyways, but I try to stay as attentive as I can. Like, if your spouse or somebody else is there with you, or your significant other that's helping you at the booth, I try not to just be talking with them a lot. But that way you're accessible and you're attentive to what they need or what they're looking at. Because, like, you're only there for 6 hours.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't have a spouse. I have a cat. So...
And you're not going to bring your cat with you. I mean, the cat might be a nice little attention grabber.
I feel like Lloyd would really
sell
the bunch of pots.
Yeah. Just have a big cat tree you put in the
and he just chills
booth
out.
And he can just sit and hang out in the sun.
That'd be great.
Have a dog bowl out there. That
brings
some people toward the tent,
especially
too.
If it's really hot. I put 2 dog bowls in my booth. Especially, well, yeah, on both corners. Sometimes... In Leavenworth, if there's not enough vendors, you can set up sideways. And so it's a 20 by 10 booth, and it's fucking great. And that
20 by 10? What do you mean? You're sticking straight out into the street instead of horizontally along the
sidewalk
kind of thing?
Park. But no, it's like, so you know how our booths are 10... So they're long, right? So they're 3 feet between each booth, and then they're 10 feet, like, your entrance is the 10 feet, and then it goes 20 feet back. Okay?
Oh, I thought it was 20 feet wide.
No, but sometimes when there's not enough people, it does go 20 feet wide, which is, like, the best.
Oh.
No. So you enter, it's like a store.
Oh, so you really don't get... You don't get that much real estate when people are walking by. You get the 10 feet. But, I mean, the sides are open,
I assume, but it has to be really inviting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Okay, that changes my perspective of how your tent's laid out a little bit then. Because I thought it was the other way around. Because all the double booths that I've seen are width-wise. Like, it's the size of 2 booths sitting next to each other.
Yeah, they that would be at, like, a really nice art fair. This is not that. This is not that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it really matters who you're next to. Because if you're next to the metal guy or the photographers, you're fucking screwed. Because they have really fancy, cool things that people look right through your booth. They're like, wow, that picture is so great, while they're standing in your booth looking through your shelves.
Yeah. That's where you almost need the sidewalls there to create
a
barrier.
I've definitely dropped some sidewalls. It has happened. Yeah. Do we have anything else to talk about?
I don't think so. I'm surprised it got to 2 hours. I think we had about 20 minutes on the end there.
As well.
So. that's a pretty high level of the selling stuff, but it also differs how much interaction I'm doing depending on the show too.
Yeah.
Some shows are pretty self-served and like people are pretty disengaged and they just want to kind of shop. And then other ones they're more engaged. It's like an art show or an art festival and like they're more interested, so they're going to ask more questions about your process and how you make it and stuff like that. So, and a lot of people, like, they don't even know you hand make it. If you're in a show with a bunch of other, like, different mediums that are not, like, art heavy, they might be like, oh, do you make all
that's
this?
That's my favorite. Do you make these? No, I just fucking sit here for 10 hours and listen to you guys ask me these stupid questions.
I have never said that and will never say that to anybody.
I've never said that either, but it's definitely gone through my brain.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Well, some people just can't fathom that you make something from hand, from scratch like that.
Yeah, but, that's true.
Or it could just be an entry conversation that they don't know what to say, and they're like, oh, these are really cool. Do you make them?
Right.
I don't hold people too much to be like, yeah, fussy make them.
Fucking make them, yeah. Ugh, the snotty remarks. Have you had anybody... Oh, here's a good... This is a good ending. Have you had anybody break anything in your booth, and how did you handle it?
Yeah. Normally, I'm just like, oh, whatever. We'll just throw it away. Don't worry about it. And then they'll freak out, and they'll be like, oh. Or like they're holding something and it like falls over, or something falls over on the on the table and it like almost knocks them and they're like, and they're like trying to catch it. I'm like, don't worry about it. Like I break 2 to 3 things when I pack up every now and then. So I usually say, really, you're more concerned about it than I will be.
That's a
so
good response.
Like, don't worry about it.
I've had a bunch of people break things on accident. And I've had somebody break something and walk away fully knowing that they broke it. And I chase them down.
Hey!
I was like, hey!
You broke this!
Yeah, that one time, this lady, like, knocked it off with her backpack or something, looked at it, and then walked away, and I saw her do it, and
did it fall on the ground?
Yeah, it went on the ground.
And it just broke?
And I ran out of my booth, and I was like, hey! You just knocked off my piece, and you didn't even say sorry. And I made her feel really bad.
Did she say anything?
I didn't do that. I'm like, yeah, you fucking did. I didn't say fucking. I was like...
Yeah, everybody can hear the sound of crashing ceramics on the ground. That's usually when all the neighboring booths look right at your booth, and they're like, oh, shit,
what
happened?
I was like, yeah, you did. Oh, I would break a piece every single week. I'm like, yeah, you did. And she's like, well, I was like, no, it's fine. I just want you to know that was really dumb, like, really not nice, and you continue on with your freaking day. That was so rude. But most of the time when people break it, I'm like, it's fine. It's just pottery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we grow unattached to things the more that we make and kind of got to learn to just be like,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
And then you get to the point where you keep stuff on shelves and you keep it in your studio and you're like, yeah, I need to just break that and just get rid of that. Get that out of my life.
Yep.
Usually it's like a piece that had a slight issue and you're like, I'll sell that as a
It'll
second.
It'll be fine.
Sometimes you're just like, eh, I should just smash that and throw it away.
Yeah.
It'll be better.
Yep.
All right. I think that's all we got for you.
That's it.
All right. Well, we'll catch you next
time. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. We really appreciate it, and we're having so much fun. If you want to follow us individually on Instagram, you totally can. Ryan's Instagram handle is @RDCeramics, and mine is 5linespottery. That's the number 5. We would love to hear from you, and don't forget to write us a review on our podcast. We read every single one of them, and we totally appreciate them. They help us out an awful lot, and they also put smiles on our faces. I hope you guys continue to listen, and we love you. Thanks. Bye.